From a quarantined studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The nation's hospitals are bracing for the impact of the coronavirus as the pandemic spreads through the country and the numbers of infections and deaths rise. But a scramble for available testing and hospital beds and even basic medical supplies has confounded healthcare providers in the world's richest nation. President Donald Trump has offered little to no assurance, instead spewing lies about the availability of testing and lashing out at reporters simply for asking questions. On Friday, he stunned the nation with this exchange.
So what do you say to what do you say the Americans were scared, though? I guess nearly 200 dead, 14,000 who are sick, millions, as you witness, who are scared right now. What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say. Go ahead. I think it's a very nasty question, and I think it's a very bad signal that you're putting out to the American people. The American people are looking for answers, and they're looking for hope. And you're doing sensationalism, and the same with NBC and Comcast. I call it Comcast. Let me just tell you, for whom you work, let me just tell you something. That's really bad reporting. And you ought to get back to reporting instead of sensationalism. Let's see if it works. It might and it might not. I happen to feel good about it, but who knows? I've been right a lot. Let's see what happens.
And that is President Trump on Friday in an exchange with a reporter during the White House's daily coronavirus task force briefings, accusing the reporter of sensationalizing the story of the coronavirus pandemic when all the reporter was doing was asking what he would say to a nation that's scared. We now turn to a physician who has a frontline view of the coronavirus crisis, Dr. Sriram Shamsundar, Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of California in San Francisco, co-founder and faculty director of the HEAL Initiative, a health workforce strengthening fellowship working in Navajo Nation and 7 countries around the world. Welcome to the program, Dr. Shamsundar.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, what is it like in San Francisco, which is one of the places where we started to see early on an outbreak, and it's considered one of the few hotspots, such as the state of Washington, the state of New York. What are you witnessing in San Francisco right now as a physician?
So I'm at UCSF and I'm attending in internal medicine. And so all the patients that have respiratory illnesses that come into the emergency room, I'm essentially seeing and deciding if they get tested for COVID, the majority of which have things like heart failure, have other reasons to, have metastatic cancer, have other reasons to have respiratory distress, but all of them are getting tested for COVID, just because we are just ramping up our testing and we want to make sure that we don't miss any COVID positive patients. So right now, the whole health system is scaling up its response to get ready for, from the ICU to the emergency room. We have several tents outside the emergency room that are screening patients with testing. And so the entire system is gearing up for more and more patients and the surge that we think is likely to come. And, it's been said over and over again, it's not a when these patients come. And so right now we have about 7 positive patients, COVID positive patients in at UCSF, and there's several more around other hospitals in the city, as well as 2 ICU patients. And so, and then there's several more that are being tested, about 25 right now are being tested in the inpatient setting.
Now, I understand that all elective surgeries are in various hospitals around the country, presumably where you are as well, have been canceled or postponed. And the main question that I'm sure is in the minds of many of my listeners and viewers is, what access do you have to testing and test kits? And are the tests reliable? There's a huge uncertainty around that coming from the federal government.
Yeah. So, you know, as all your listeners likely know, that the level of testing that we have in the United States is nowhere near what we want to have. And I think that it's slowly scaling up. So I know at UCSF, we're able to test more and more people every single day, but we are limiting it to people who are symptomatic or are symptomatic that have known COVID contacts. And so, you know, it's nowhere near what we need to get. I think in South Korea, they say that there's about 20,000 patients tested every day. And the United States is lagging well behind that. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis and in the next few days, we hope to be able to scale up the amount of testing. But clearly, we're not at the level that we need to be at.
President Trump has claimed that the federal government has sent out millions of testing kits to states around the nation, but governors are pleading for tests because they haven't gotten them. And it's very clear that he's essentially been lying about this. You heard the response that he had to a reporter who simply asked him on Friday morning what he would say to Americans who are scared. As a physician, are you deeply concerned about the lack of what seems like lack of federal leadership around this pandemic?
I think the leadership from the White House has been a complete fiasco since the start of the pandemic. And I think that we knew that this was coming 2 months ago. And I think the administration is getting better from, you know, a task force. And I think you've seen an incredible leadership from a lot of governors around the country, Gavin Newsom in California. And I think Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, we've had him speak here at UCSF. He's an incredible leader. He's part of that task force. I think you have incredible people within the CDC and even in the task force. But, you know, Trump himself has been unhelpful at best and, you know, disastrous at worst. And so clearly, you know, a lot of his comments are not helpful. Obviously, this is something unprecedented for the world as well as, you know, the American people. And to lash out at people that are rightfully scared at shelter in place orders and, you know, schools being canceled, I think it's incredibly appropriate to be concerned if you're, you know, if you have a pulse in this.
And you know, one would imagine that the best thing for him to do would be to defer to the medical leaders that are on his coronavirus task force, such as Dr. Fauci. He has repeatedly undercut Fauci at every turn. You know, Dr. Fauci might say something and Trump will turn around and essentially openly say the exact opposite. So it's quite remarkable. So let's talk about California, which now on Thursday, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, issued what are being considered the strictest orders around the nation, maybe rivaling those of New York under Andrew Cuomo, basically asking on everybody in California who is not involved, who is not considered an essential worker, to shelter in place, to stay at home. How important is this? And what is the effect that it could have on the pandemic?
Yes, I think the social distancing that we've all heard about is just incredibly important. I know that people are following the Italian outbreak and the Chinese outbreak. And, you know, I think there's directions that we could go. And you can see with South Korea, with China, you're starting to see those countries get on the other side of the curve. And of course, we don't know when some of the you know, the travel and the movement restrictions are lifted, how that's going to play out. But I would say that the social distancing for all Californians and for the entire country is so important, because this the healthcare system needs to have this pandemic spread over a certain amount of time so that we don't completely overwhelm the hospitals. I think there's a study that shows that in Wuhan, the mortality rate was about 5.2% in that region. And in other parts of the country, it was about 0.7%. And you can see that if the hospital systems get overwhelmed and too many patients come at the same time, we won't have the bed capacity, we won't have the ventilator capacity, the ICU capacity. And that's really what we're trying to address, where the hospital systems don't overwhelm. And so when you hear this concept flattening the curve, it's really driving the total amount of cases down, but also spreading those cases out over, you know, months and months, where we don't overwhelm our hospital system.
So spreading the cases out could result in lower fatality, simply because doctors wouldn't have to then be making those grim choices that we've heard doctors in Italy having to make because they haven't had enough ventilators. And is Italy a case study for what not to do? And do you have any ideas why the death rate in Italy has been so high? Some are saying that it's partly because it has such a large percentage of its population is elderly, but now there are more deaths in Italy than in China. And China, I mean, the populations of these two countries are completely, you know, off the charts. China's the world's most populous nation, and Italy is one of the smaller countries, and yet Italy has had more deaths.
Yes, I think that, you know, you can see a lot of commentary around the U.S. being about 10 to 12 days behind the Italian outbreak. And I think that initially, the northern part of Italy didn't necessarily take the social distancing advice seriously. And you can hear many ICU doctors just describe the catastrophe of what the late February, where, you know, the idea of the situation that they are in now, where they're seeing the level of mortality, the level of ICU beds, the complete capacity of ICU beds being taken up by COVID patients. I think that, you know, that level of absolute change over the last 3 weeks that they've experienced, this is what Gavin Newsom and these governors across the country are trying to address. And I think in Italy, it is the elderly population, as far as we know, and the comorbidities that are driving a lot of the mortality that, you know, I think that is different than it's seen in China. And some of the studies, I think to your listeners, some of the studies coming out about the first cases in the United States are that there is a young population that are being affected. So by no means the 20 to 44 year old range is immune to this. And so I think that young people need to take this seriously. I think a number of young people are taking it seriously, but, you know, they are in fact at risk to some degree. And all of us know people, you know, our parents, our grandparents that we're in community with that are at even higher risk. So it's important that the social distancing be heeded.
What about the fact that the sheer cost of healthcare in the U.S. has, you know, been prohibitive just in general, even before this pandemic? We know, you know, there's so many Americans that simply go without the healthcare they need because they don't have health insurance or they're underinsured. They're worried about how much it's going to cost them. A cancer diagnosis can completely bankrupt a person, even if they survive the cancer, their finances don't survive. And in this time of the coronavirus crisis, we're seeing politicians claim that, well, everything should be free. And it's not necessarily, you know, the federal government hasn't actually taken steps to ensure that yet. We're seeing little reports trickle out of people who've had to have treatment for the disease that have been stuck with bills running into tens of thousands of dollars. As a doctor, how do you feel about this?
I think those of us that are in the system know that the U.S. healthcare system has been broken for a long period of time. I think that there's been, you know, numerous calls, Bernie Sanders being the most prominent one, of Medicare for All. But, you know, this whole movement of Medicare for All that is so sensible and, you know, drives the cost down of what the U.S. Spends on healthcare, which is, for the results that we get, is, you know, a huge amount of our GDP, 18%, I believe. And the results that we're getting, the bankruptcies that you mentioned, the tying healthcare to employment, which we're seeing now as people are, you know, forced to take time off or often don't have paid time off, and their insurance is connected to their employment. You know, this is really has been I think everybody in the course of their life experiences the U.S. healthcare system as problematic and difficult to navigate and kind of incomprehensible. And now we're seeing, I think, the entire population experiencing a lot of questions that we don't have the answers to. Is, you know, how much is COVID testing going to cost? Is my entire hospitalization going to be covered? And, you know, at the front lines, those questions are always obscured from us. And oftentimes the U.S. healthcare system hits people on the back end with, you know, kind of these massive costs. And, you know, right now, with all the things the population has to worry about, you know, going into debt over becoming sick from something you can't control at all is, you know, is ludicrous. And so I think this is an opportunity to resurface these conversations, because it's at the top of mind for all of us of Medicare for All. How do we come up with a more coherent, more just, all the inequities that we see in the healthcare system is going to be exacerbated by this for our vulnerable patients, our folks that are without shelter, our homeless population. And so this is an opportunity to really think and act on a system that has been terrible for a long time, and really try to shift and change our system, because now the majority of Americans are going to experience what all of us inside the system have known for a long time.
So if a homeless person were to come to your hospital with symptoms, what would you do? You know, would you ask for insurance, or you meaning your hospital administration, or because the symptoms might be potentially COVID-like, and the impact to the public's health, you know, is huge for people to go untested and untreated? Do you bring them in?
Yeah, so I think right now the city of San Francisco is trying to have a comprehensible approach to the homeless population. But right now, I think when somebody comes with symptoms, there's a low threshold to test, and there's a low threshold to keep them in the hospital, because putting them out into the community without appropriate measures, you know, is just asking for, you know, we've seen the prison system is starting to have COVID positive cases, where the homeless population and shelters, getting social distancing, all of those things are incredibly difficult tasks. And we have, you know, incredible leaders working on that. But these are vulnerable populations that, you know, in a country as wealthy as the United States, we shouldn't have this many. And we're going to see that they're, you know, that pandemics are going to be difficult to control in these populations.
I want to ask you, as somebody who is in this environment, are you facing a shortage of medical equipment? We're seeing providers around the country deeply worried about not enough masks, not enough gowns, gloves, personal protective equipment. There are, you know, people who are actually asking the public on social media to, you know, give them the masks that people might have bought up and stockpiled. This is a very, very serious thing. There are, I understand, nurses and doctors that are being asked to, in some cases, reuse disposable masks or try to make them do, which is just, you know, it's terrifying in the world's richest nation.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, at UCSF, we in the emergency room every morning, there's a 10 a.m. Rounding, and there is a strong effort to keep the hospital staff and workforce protected while, you know, reusing a lot of this equipment. And so, you know, these N95s are not in infinite supply. And so we're, you know, being told to trade off every 2 days, like using one N95 and then, you know, putting it in a brown paper bag and then using another one, and then essentially trying to conserve a lot of this PPE and, you know, in a
personal
lot of parts.
Protective equipment, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, personal protective equipment. And a lot of places in the world, this is the reality. And in the United States, I think that the shortages are in anticipation of the level of surge that we're expecting. And so, you know, I think our hospital administration have said we have, less than a 2-week supply of the personal protective equipment, of the yellow gowns, and then the N95s are also in short supply. And you know, this is one of the wealthier hospitals in the country, you know, certainly the state. And so I think that this is a concern. The WHO just had a, forum where they're talking about trying to access the supply chain and, you know, ships being docked and the level of complexity of getting this equipment and really needing global solidarity. Because as we think about our colleagues in sub-Saharan Africa, the population there and other parts of the world that are much poorer health systems, weaker health systems, PPE is going to need to flow equitably across these places. And so definitely in the United States, we need to get access to PPE, because we're seeing a huge infectious rate amongst the health workforce in Italy, and we just can't afford the US health workforce, frontline health professionals, to get sick and fall out as this pandemic unfolds, because we don't have the right equipment.
Dr. Chamasundar, since we started out our conversation focusing on Trump's inability to reassure a nation, how would you as a doctor reassure your patients, the people that you encounter who might be terrified of the fact that they woke up with a scratchy throat, or just, you know, even if they aren't experiencing symptoms, we're just worried because we're hearing things like, you know, half of the nation, half of the state could become infected if people don't, you know, take proper precautions.
Yeah, I think that there is, you know, grounds to be worried. I think that there, you know, I think it would be foolish to say that the level of school closings, the level of, infections that are predicted, and some of the mortality that is predicted from this global pandemic would not evoke anxiety amongst all of us, and at the same time, I think as a global population, as the U.S. health workforce, the amount of leadership that I'm seeing at this moment at my own medical center, and, you know, frontline health professionals that are volunteering for these shifts, that are, you know, coming to work every day and really trying their absolute best to serve the population. And I think over the next weeks, we're going to have much more testing. We're going to be able to, predict what that curve is going to look like. And I think that the leadership you're seeing in the state by Gavin Newsom's administration is incredible. And I think we don't know what to expect in this global pandemic. And so some of these precautions of really, doing our best to get testing online, really enacting the social distancing. And, you know, we just talked about the personal protective equipment, the N95s, the masks, like asking your listeners to, you know, really save those masks for the health professionals that are going to be taking care of, you know, the Californian population, because we need it.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, spending this time with us, and good luck to you. Stay safe out there.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Dr. Sriram Chamasundar, Associate Professor of Medicine at UCSF, co-founder and faculty director of the HEAL Initiative, a health workforce strengthening fellowship working in Navajo Nation and 7 countries around the world. We've been discussing the coronavirus pandemic from a healthcare provider's perspective. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.